Hello and welcome to We Inspire, the one and only podcast where we come together with some of the most talented women in e-commerce and digital marketing. In this 13-week series, we speak with digital directors, heads of e-commerce, marketing directors, and global digital leads whose stories will help to inspire those up-and-coming superstars of today becoming tomorrow's digital leaders.
Hi everyone, it's Terry Cannon, founder of WeCom and of course the host of the We Inspire podcast. So the podcast that is dedicated to sharing inspirational and empowering stories of women within digital and e-commerce. This week, I am super, super excited to be joined by Vicky James. So Vicky has spent the vast amount of her career working with some of the most amazing businesses in the kind of the fashion world, and working her way up within the marketing department, and now leads the marketing department for Missguided. So I'm super, super excited on this one. Thank you so much, Vicky, for joining us.
No props. Hi, Terry. Nice to finally be doing this.
I know. I feel like we've been prepping this one for a while.
Yeah, no.
My marketing manager is so excited for this one. I've got to be honest. She's going to probably kill me for saying that, but I've never seen her kind of so enthusiastic about anything, to be honest. So we're really, really excited to kind of get this one going. So like I said, I'm not the only one that's kind of excited about the podcast. Obviously, the research that went into the episode really exposed a lot of stuff. So obviously, you studied at Leeds University, got a degree in English literature and language.
Yes, that's right.
What was really impressive for me was just how much you was doing in your final year at uni. So you was working with some huge businesses like London Fashion Week, ASOS. What was the thought behind that? Because not only you're in your final year, that's your busiest year. You're either mad or super, super passionate. So what was the thought behind it and what did you gain from it?
Well, I actually had another job in a nightclub as well while I was in my final year. As you say, like I went to university, kind of was in sixth form working out what I wanted to do. And the route I thought in my head was fashion journalism. This was when obviously magazines were huge in kind of the 2010s. And that's what before that actually, that was when I was actually at uni. In the 2000s, magazines were still a big thing. And in my head, it was like, I want to be a fashion journalist. I think like Ugly Betty was out at the time and that was like my calling. But when I spoke to my career advisor and my mum, they were like, you know, that's super limiting. If you study fashion journalism, what if you change your mind? What if things change? So decided to study English literature and language. Went to Leeds Uni, which was amazing and a really kind of good school for that. But I knew that deep down, you know, I didn't want to go into kind of a teacher role or something that was more scholarly. I still wanted to work in the fashion industry. So whilst I was at university, I was writing for the student paper and I just kind of wanted to get my hands into anything that would give me experience because I wasn't studying a course with that kind of sandwich year in industry that a lot of other people would by the time they graduated. So I actually started working when I think maybe it was in my first or second year for a guy in Leeds who had like a small concept store in the city centre. So he sold like upcoming brands. We did events. We actually at the time were doing like pop-up stores on like a rooftop in the city centre of Leeds. And I helped him on like his e-com store, writing the blog when obviously blogs were a massive thing back then, and supporting in any way I could. And then from there, I was in the summer before my final year and did an internship at somewhere called Hervia, which at the time had a store, which they still have at the moment, like a lifestyle store in Manchester. It's super high end. And they also had the franchise for Vivienne Westwood at the time in the north. So there I gained loads of experience in kind of, I was doing graphic design, copywriting, helping one of the buyers, working on the shop floor, like bits of everything really. And I think that was probably the stepping point then into this kind of a London Fashion Week opportunity I got, which was the September of my final year. So literally I went back to uni and then left for like 4 days and went down to London and worked at Fashion Week, which was kind of insane. It was for Fashion Scout. So it was kind of at the time, the like off schedule complimentary part that was all these emerging designers, and was working in the office there, helping on the show schedules, working with the production manager on actually doing the like calling of the shows, getting the models ready, working with the designers, making sure like the press were seated, etc. at the shows. So yeah, that was insane. And you know, we got all got to kind of like sit and watch shows. I remember Kate Moss being at one, which was crazy. So yeah, it was like a super exciting time, especially when you're someone from kind of like Cheshire, whose parents were like my dad was an engineer, my mum worked in like training. So it's, I didn't have any contacts in the fashion industry, let's say, and I knew I wouldn't. So I had to kind of make it for myself. So I got that while I was at uni. And then I actually saw on Twitter, I think, like Tim, who was the studio manager at the time at ASOS, saying he needed freelance copywriters, which was kind of my bread and butter. Obviously, like, I did English and writing on the side. So I went down to London for the day for a trial and got kind of a, I say permanent, but a freelance position at ASOS. So yeah, did that on and off for 10 months and was getting kind of the mega bus down from Leeds on a Thursday night, working ASOS by day. Yeah, Megabus, staying in a hostel, working all day Friday, getting the Megabus back, going straight to a nightclub where I worked from like 11 till 7 in the morning. And then, yeah, go doing it all again on a Sunday. So I worked there like 1-2 days a week in my final year. And then until kind of a few months after I graduated as well. And then I got a 10-month job in PR at an agency back in Cheshire and decided it wasn't for me. And then, yeah, kind of my career changed from there, really.
Changed there, didn't it? I think that's, it brings us nicely on to the next question, really, because what we see a lot of people is, a lot of people, when you're kind of starting out in your careers, there's a lot of jumps now. People seem to move around quite a lot, but you didn't do that. You did the complete polar opposite.
Yeah.
So when your first big role went in marketing, mm-hmm. was with Boohoo.
Yes.
Wow. And in its really early stages, wasn't it?
Yeah.
How did that come about?
Yeah, so it was early stages at the time, and obviously they were going through mega growth and pre-actually them floating. So we were there like pre-IPO when it was, I mean, I say it was a small team. It wasn't. Like, I was in the brand marketing team, and just that itself, which actually didn't even include kind of the social press influencer side, there was probably like 12 of us just in that core brand marketing function. But that came about, my plan was never Manchester, and I feel a lot of people say this. I think growing up near Manchester, I was like, I'm never gonna live in Manchester, why would I went there when I was a teenager. And it was always like, London's the only place you can go. And at the time I was freelancing at Flannels, which was in Wigan back then. So their head office was actually in a not so glamorous like estate in Wigan. And I was copywriting there, and the role at Boohoo came up, and I think my mum let me know about it, that when she was trying to look for, help me look for
didn't
jobs.
Didn't want you to go anywhere. Didn't want you to go too far.
And I was like, do I want to work in Manchester? Do I want to work in fast fashion? Like, my actual experience apart from ASOS was more kind of with mid-market or higher end brands. But I thought, you know what? It's stable. And back then, like, your entry roles in London, you just couldn't afford to live unless you knew someone there. Like, there was no way I was living in London and working on an entry level salary, because I would have had no money. So, yeah, I decided, you know what, let's have a look at this. And at the time, I think Manchester was really growing with these brands. I don't even think PLT was established by itself, which is obviously a family brand of the Boohoo group. And the role was kind of this junior brand exec role, which kind of played to a lot of my skill set, was copy focused. It was content at the time. Boohoo produced a magazine which went in every parcel. It was, they were produced every 6 weeks. So like tons of time and effort went into that more editorial content creation. Yeah. So that was what I really went in to support the teams on, like producing content for the blog, the magazine, working on campaigns. So obviously our key seasonal campaigns, party, festival, summer. But what we did as a department also changed. So I think the biggest thing really, and I reported directly into Natasha Hackett, who was then fashion content manager, then head of brand, and now is actually brand director across like the London brands of Boohoo Group, so KM, Coast, Warehouse, Oasis. And we absorbed TV in our world, because it kind of, because that thing, it's like, where does it sit? It doesn't sit in the digital team. It's traditional media. So we did all out of home already in the team, and then TV was such a huge thing back then for Boohoo. Like, everyone remembers that Boohoo jingle at the end of the TV ads. Like, it was crazy. We were spending like some months, like £500,000 on TV ads. So no one really knew how to do it. So Tash kind of gave me that as like, this is your baby now, you look after media buying. So obviously we had an agency who bought the media for us, but it grew from there really. And I suppose then a lot more of a well-rounded marketing role. So I looked after the TV from what spots we bought, work with the agency, our sponsorship deals. So obviously we had a long-standing deal with MTV that we worked on. So it was really within that kind of marketing role. And then also then absorbing the out of home, any print ads we did, which again, crazy to think of now, you advertised in magazines, partnerships with magazines. So we'd do like codes with like Look Mag or Heat for kind of discount. And this was free for us. So it was actually a really good opportunity to get in something at the time, which was a media people still consumed, but you actually didn't pay anything for it. So that was my role. And then when my boss went on mat leave, I started to look after the production of the ads itself. So that was kind of something she managed, and we had a creative agency. So I managed the production of the shoots. And I think that was something at the time we had a new kind of interim head of brand, head of creative, who was, his background was a lot more in creative direction. And we were like, you know what, let's try and do this ourselves. Like, we had an amazing lead creative in the team, our stylist, I had a producer, and we're like, let's just try and do these ads ourselves. So I think the first one we produced ourselves, crazily, was actually in Texas, in America, in a town called Martha, which is hundreds of miles away from anything else. And I think we had no budget. We must have got three flights there and driven in the dead of night, like 200 miles to this town, just like a handful of us, and produced this TV ad, which was crazy. So yeah, that was kind of the start then of learning production from scratch, really picking it up from the amazing agencies we worked with. And then we ended up taking production in-house for Boohoo, which was kind of a massive thing. Like, obviously you're saving hundreds of thousands a year then on your creative budget. So yeah, they've all kind of evolved from like copyright into media to creative production campaigns. And yeah, it was a wild old ride, really.
It sounds crazy, but you was there for such a long time, wasn't you?
Yeah.
And it was, because obviously it wasn't just Boohoo where it started. It then went into Nasty Gal, which is obviously, everyone knows about the brand now. I think even when you talk collectively as a group now, it's probably the most powerful group on the circuit when you look at it. But when you look at it from where you started to where you left, so because obviously you left as senior manager.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think they trusted you so much through promotions?
I think, you know, as you say, we were there from the early days, and at that point, like Carolyn Mahmood, who were the co-founders and CEOs at the time, did know everyone who was there. So they knew me as like a 23-year-old who was a junior member of the team. So they knew everyone. And I think, especially working on the creative side, like Carol was very involved with brands. So I got to work with her quite a lot, to be honest, because she used to come on like a lot of the shoots. And so I started junior, and then I think it's different then. I think maybe good or bad or naively, like I didn't necessarily push for promotion. I was like, you know what, just get your head down and do stuff to prove it and hope that someone recognizes that you are working as much as you can. And I think given my role changed so much, and I saw areas that no one owned, and I was like, you know what, I'm just going to do this. And then that was an area I had. So even as kind of an exec, I had like an £8 million budget I pretty much managed myself. And just took that on. And I think we did have different people come in. We had a great marketing director at the time, Richard Clark, who was like, you know, I think you should take it to the next step, become a manager. And he really supported that and pushed it through. So that was kind of my time at Boohoo. And then, to be honest, like 4 years in, I was getting a bit of kind of like itchy feet, because I'd been there and I felt, you know what, I've seen this, and the team was changing itself. This is then when actually social influence was becoming much more of a big thing. And that was a separate function really within the wider marketing team. And we'd bought Nasty Gal in the February, I think, of 2017. And that was the brand everyone wanted to work for internally. Like when we found out we had it, most of the girls were like, oh my God, we want to work on Nasty Gal. So I spoke to Carol, the CEO, and was like, I'm kind of not sure what my next step is at Boohoo. And at the time as well, our team split. So there was like creative and brand, and they were two different teams. And I was like, I don't want to just do shoots, and I don't want to just do the brand marketing side. I still want to do both. So I spoke to Carol and she was like, listen, we've just bought Nasty Gal and we don't have anyone in the UK. Go over there and kind of be the brand marketing manager for Nasty Gal. So I went over there and the person running Nasty Gal at the time was also moved over from Boohoo, Kelly Byrne, who had kind of done head of international at Boohoo and then crazily come back off mat leave with Twins and then basically ran the whole of Nasty Gal and set it up from nothing. So I went over and there I was the first kind of person in the UK's brand marketing manager. I then took one of my girls from Boohoo. She came over as social media exec and it was like me and her against the world for months and months until we built the team. So when I left 4-ish years later, that was kind of 12 of us then in that brand function and also had colleagues in France and Australia and obviously the team in LA as well. So yeah, it was taking things on and I think just proving myself first, I suppose, rather than being like, okay, I want to get here. And, you know, at the time, Boohoo did have really good programs in terms of development. So we had like a stepping into management program where you were working with your peers across the business and also other like heads of directors, et cetera. So you understood what you needed to do to develop. And we did like mental health awareness training, the kind of color energies thing, which I also found like super useful to realize, especially my own development of like, why maybe you don't get on with certain people or you're different to certain people in the way you work. And that was really revealing too. So I think, yeah, it was just getting into everything I could, definitely making friends across departments too. Like I got, especially at Nasty Gal, like really involved with the product teams because before at Boohoo, it was a bigger beast. And especially when I left, it was a lot bigger beast. So at Nasty Gal, we were quite a small team. So I worked super closely with like the head of design, the product director, and started to learn a bit more about like margins, like how they buy, like what the process is, how they work with suppliers. And I think it just gives you a lot more of a well-rounded understanding of how the larger business works, really.
Definitely. And obviously, from that point, you then moved on to arguably their biggest kind of competitor in the area.
Yeah.
So that didn't go great. But,
Just shocked. I have people messaging me from Australia like, oh my God, what's happened?
So you've worked on some amazing things.
Yeah.
When you look at you're currently at Misguided, you've been at Nasty Gal through its growth. From the acquisition of Boohoo, but then also you was at the beginning of not the beginning of Boohoo's drive, but the early stages of it. So you've worked on some amazing things, but what stands out to you? Like, what would you say the biggest campaign or best campaign you've worked on would be?
I think the biggest and most memorable, oh gosh, there's been a lot really, and probably ones that like you feel more involved in. I think the biggest one was probably Nasty Gal and when we had Cara Delevingne. So our kind of ethos at Nasty Gal was these like badass women, basically. Obviously it was born out of a rock and roll song. It had its history and vintage and we really wanted to associate with these like amazing women who stood for something. And Cara's always been quite vocal about women's rights. And she was British, which was kind of also a nice tie-in of having an American brand, but then these new kind of British roots we had. So we shot Cara, who also I had like loved from like a teenager. Obviously, when you're growing up, she was like the next person after Kate Moss, wasn't she? Is one of these British girls. And we went out. I was lucky enough to, I was on the shoot. We flew to New York. We shot it in a recording studio that like Jimi Hendrix had recorded in. So like amazing. I think it's called Electric Lady in New York. Worked with an amazing photographer, Zoe Grossman, who's like shot tons of covers and every celebrity under the sun, really. So yeah, we got to fly out, myself and the producer in my team, for that shoot, which was insane, and spend a few days in New York extra, which we were allowed to. And then we had a launch party in London, which actually happened like 2 days after I got back from Australia for another event, which I was there for 4 days for, which was crazy. 4 days in Sydney, got back to London, straight into this event. And we had it at The Box in Soho, which is kind of this notorious club, which not many people can get into. And obviously Cara was there. we had like Grimmy DJ, and it was just like, I think at the time, like when Mahmood and Carol came, and it was definitely a different kind of venue than they were used to in terms of parties. And all the directors were there, and obviously there's like shows on, and we're like, oh gosh, how's this going to go down? But they were like, oh my God, guys, like, we've never had an event like this. And like the caliber of talent, I suppose, that was there and the people who came was crazy. And, you know, we had like billboards across London. And yeah, I think that was insane. I think everyone at the brand and at the group was like, this is like a massive step up for Nasty Gal at this time in terms of how it's associating itself with kind of a higher level than a lot of fast fashion brands.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that we always keep reverting to whenever you and I have spoke is just the power of social and the growth of that yeah. area, and especially within that influencer market, isn't it? Because I know there's one thing that you do, which I don't see a lot on profiles, is you share kind of media clips, don't you?
Yeah.
To kind of create a profile for yourself, don't you?
Yeah.
What's the reason behind you doing that?
I think it's just nice to see. And obviously a lot of those will be like shoots I've directed. So at a point in time that I was directing like the ads for Nasty Gal, like, or TV ads. So I think it's just good to see stuff like you're proud of, and then remind, like, every so often I do have a scroll, and my actual Instagram is a sad testament to me as a person, because it's mainly my work and Holly, and it's like, do I actually exist? It's just like my work, a lot of it. I'm trying to change that now, but yeah, it's good to see what you've created and then what you've created with your team. Like, I remember the first TV ad we did for Nasty Gal, like, I took my producer over to LA, and she'd never really done like a video shoot before. It was more like stills, studio, et cetera. And I was like, come on, we can do this. And Americans are crazy. Like, there's these W-9s, like, they have like unions. You have to go to the lunch break at a certain time. Like, it's very different to the UK.
You don't get lunch breaks in the UK.
Yeah. And we were just like in Topanga in LA, which is like up these kind of like hills of LA and like quite far away from civilization of LA. And then it's like, we're trying to produce, and they're like, oh my God, we've not got any coffee. So we're driving down a hill, grabbing coffees, driving back up, like then trying to direct the TV. Like, it's crazy times. And I think it's good to see what's come out of it actually. And then actually how many millions of people have seen that. Obviously you're doing nationwide TV campaigns or YouTube campaigns across the UK and US. So yeah, I think it's a good kind of, I suppose, portfolio of work really. And a lot of that has been in these ad campaigns to remind yourself that, you know, when you sat there, especially when it was COVID, and I was used to traveling every, like, minimum every 6 weeks, like most of the time I wasn't at home for more than 2 weeks, to remind yourself when you sat at home in COVID that you actually did have a, you know, creative life beforehand. So yeah,
right. Would you recommend, because obviously when we see a lot of use the terminology there, the portfolios, We always see that when it comes to like when we say creative, like you naturally always kind of lean towards like design.
Yeah.
Would you recommend kind of these for the kind of the junior kind of marketers to start building portfolios for themselves to help?
I think it's good to have there. And I mean, a lot of effort can go into it, can't it? And cost, I suppose, and time. And it's probably hard to do when, you know, if you're working a full-time job, where do you have it? But I know a lot of my teams, like at Misguided, I also manage the studio team, which is all creative. So the photographers, the stylists, the videographers. And I think it's a great space to have, I suppose, your showreel, which whether that's, you know, TV ads, whether that's as you as a stylist or an art director or the videographer yourself, even, I mean, you can host them on pretty simple websites anyway, or just have galleries of images. I think it's great to have, and probably as well developing. And this is something I encourage my team to do, is like, if getting freelance work outside of work, especially the junior members of the team, like, you know, take a stylist, for example, an e-com, like, they're not going to want to do that forever. Let's be realistic. Like, that's not what stylist dream is day in, day out, to being an e-com stylist necessarily. So what can you do at the weekend? And a lot of the guys have great relationships with models and the makeup artists, and they'll do test shoots at the weekend. So it gives them the opportunity to build this portfolio and then be able to meet clients, do extra things, like some of them are doing like music video shoots on the weekend, which is a completely different work. And they've then got that balance of knowing they've got an income and a stable job and like a job where they really love the team, but then having the opportunity to do something that's outside of, I suppose, their day to day, and a little more creative freedom. So yeah, definitely. I think it really depends on the role, I suppose, again, you know, if you're coming from a copywriting background, like, yes, great, have a portfolio somewhere, or even just clippings of like the work you've done. I suppose in influencer and those kind of jobs, it's a little harder to show what you've done if you're coming from an influencer marketing background. Like, how do you show the relationships you've built? But, you know, a lot of that might just be profiles you have on Instagram. I know a couple of my team from Nasty Gal previously had like their like PR accounts of like events they'd ran and like campaigns they built, or when they'd done press mailers, and they just kind of had that on the side to keep an account, really, of even just remembering the things you've done, because you do so much you kind of forget, don't you? It's hard to keep track.
We keep talking about socials. There is one question when we start talking about influencer stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, the most famous person I've got following me is probably not even worth talking about. He's probably like the most popular person in school. Obviously, you just spoke about then, like, you get these big partnerships with these incredible, like, A-list celebrities. Away from Cara Delevingne, who's probably the most famous person you've partnered or worked with or follows you, which is a good question.
Oh, God, follows. I don't know. What if they unfollow me? That would be embarrassing.
That would be really awkward, and I'm not taking the blame for it.
I can't remember who's famous. I do have a couple of famous followers from obviously knowing people and being on shoots and stuff with them. Most famous person. So at Boohoo, and I wasn't working at Boohoo in the time, but I was in LA, so I went to the party, which was when they had Zendaya, which was like pre-Zendaya's like huge fame now. So this was when really she was known for kind of Disney, and they did a campaign with her, and I went to the party actually in LA. So like Zendaya was there, Snoop Dogg was there. So yeah, maybe Zendaya otherwise the most. I'm not going to say I didn't have a conversation with her, but I was in the same room as Zendaya. And then, yeah, Cara, Emily Ratajkowski, who is kind of famous and especially since then has really come on. She has her own brand. She's obviously now written a book about how she's been treated in the modeling world as a female. So yeah, and again, met her. We did a shoot with her for a campaign with Nasty Gal. So yeah, Cara, Emily Ratajkowski and Zendaya, which I do think are three female kind
really
of
empowering
places. Yeah,
you had me at Snoop Dogg. You had me. He was just in the room. I would have been embarrassing in that room. Just what running around, I was gonna say running around like a lost puppy, but and there wasn't a punt to that. So look, you've clearly worked with amazing people. Who do you think since like kind of inspired your career? Like, what managers have really impacted you?
I've been like, what? I mean, not had that many, especially at Boohoo Group. I kind of had two managers, one at Boohoo, one at Nasty Gal. Both were women who I think they joined Boohoo again at its early stages and managed the crazy life of Boohoo at the time, especially as they were in the management, senior management positions of growing this huge global brand. So that's Natasha Hackett, who, as I said, brand director now at the London brands for the group, and Kelly Byrne, who actually now is the CGO at Attlee.
So she's recently started something new, hasn't she?
Yeah, she left Nasty Gal last year. So both of those have been kind of inspirational in the way that, like, they've knuckled down, like, they've not cruised their career, like, they've been there, done everything, had this crazy time when we were, like, traveling constantly across the world and having to juggle that. I mean, I think at one point Kelly was literally, like, LA to Sydney to Dubai, like, always on a flight somewhere. And then both actually went off on mat leave, Tash twice. Kelly actually had twins, which is difficult enough. Anyway, I'm a twin, so I know this. My mum tells me how difficult it is. And came back and, like, managed to do both, which is kind of crazy, and have lives outside of this, which I think is the other thing people forget, and I definitely forgot in my early 20s, is like balancing work and life. And I suppose at one point it was a hybrid work life, because you kind of went out after work and then just went back into work the next day, so it was all one thing. But yeah, I think they've definitely been inspiring in like showing that do the kind of work and that'll get you where you need to be. And then other than that, actually, at Missguided, like, I was fortunate enough until he stepped down to report into Nitin Passi, who was the founder and CEO of Missguided. And I think that's super interesting when you are like working directly with the CEO, especially the one that's founded the business. And I did this with Carol Kane as well at Boohoo, but just knowing everything they've kind of gone through, their reasoning behind it, what inspired them to start the brand. And like knitting is a super kind of supportive of letting you do what you want to do or what you think. Like, and I'll be like, do you want to approve this? He's like, I don't need to approve things. Like, you know what you're doing. Like, you don't need to ask me for approval. He's like, let me know what you're doing, but I don't need to sign it off, kind of thing. Which is good, and like to know that they have that faith in you, I think.
If you could describe yourself in three words and why you've had the career you've had, mm-hmm. what would they be?
Oh God. I don't know if what I say would be what other people say.
We don't worry about them till afterwards.
I do like, this isn't three words. So like, determined. I don't know if that is the word, but like knowing that, I don't even think it's about success for me. Like I got brought up by parents, and like my parents are kind of had me, they're a lot older. They came from that generation of like, you need to work. And as I say, like they didn't have money. They wanted us to have a good life. So my mum had three jobs. Like my dad worked constantly. It's like, unfortunately work is a fact of life and you have to work hard and you don't just deserve things on a plate. And that definitely was kind of like, you have to just put the effort in and like determine that if I want to make a good life for myself, that's completely on me. I would like to say maybe friendly. I think that's probably one of the things, and like what I always say to my team and try and do is like, you're not going to be friends with everyone, but put an effort in with everyone at least. And like even from like some of the people I've got on with best at work has been like the security guards who are on the door every day at work that you just kind of chat to, but then they're there for you when you've had a bad day and you're going to sit in the, I used to sit in the security office at Boohoo and sit with the security.
I love them guys, by the way, because I used to go and they're amazing.
Yeah, they are. And even one of them once, like, he offered me to go and stay at his mum's house in Jamaica when I was going to go on holiday. He's like, don't stay at my mum's, it's fine. I was like, is it fine? Is that okay? But then they're there for you, do you know what I mean? Like, it's crazy, like, how much you see those people as well. And I think, like often, like maybe not everyone speaks to them every day, although they're literally there kind of like looking after the builder, looking after you. Like if you're working late, they're making sure you're okay. They're dragging you out at like 8 o'clock when you've not left the office and making sure you go home. So yeah, be friendly, determined. I'm going to say one that, maybe is a positive and negative is like maybe slightly erratic. I will admit that. Like, I think that's my job. It's like so varied and I look after a lot of things. So I have to kind of, my head goes to lots of different places, which some people love, some people find difficult, I suppose. So I've learned to tame that down in certain audiences, but yeah, determined.
I like that erratic one. I like the erratic one. Because everyone says the same things, like, well, I'm ambitious, and of course you are. That's why you've got to where you've got to. But what we want to understand is the other bits that, that, like you said, they can sometimes be a bit of negative, but are they, though?
Yeah. So,
look, a lot of interns always, when it's breaking to the market, there's far more opportunities available now than there was 10 years ago. When you're hiring for junior roles in your team, because they don't have experience, how do they stand out to you? If you could give some advice to that.
Yeah, I think obviously it's different in different businesses, but you don't even see everyone who applies because obviously like the HR teams normally will kind of scan through and cut down roles. So you get X amount of, say there's 100, you might see 30 of those 100. And obviously it'll be different based on levels of experience. And I think, you know, I do have people in my team who didn't go to university, actually, and that's completely fine. Like two of the people in my team currently didn't go to uni. They didn't kind of study in the traditional way. They went straight into kind of having work experience outside of college and worked up from there. And, you know, that's kind of my social exec and my influencers, that both of whom I think are 22, one's 22, one's 23, and have kind of just worked their way in industry first. So I think definitely, don't worry if you've not been to university and got a degree. Like, I don't think it necessarily matters. And I think if you can show you're trying to do something, whether that's you've had to work somewhere locally that's relevant to the role, or you do something in your spare time, that you can build kind of a profile. And I definitely think you see a lot of people now building their own like social profiles or doing like tips to drive engagement on TikTok, and they'll do like a video, and I'm serving them all the time on my For You page of kind of young people who have actually like, they're on social all day, they've worked out kind of hacks around things, and then they share that content and actually they start building a profile for themselves as people who know about this. So I think anything you can do and learn and create yourself, especially in the social influencer role where you have a page where either you're like sharing information or you know tips, because how does it stand out on a CV otherwise? I think putting tons of effort into creative CV, and people have mixed opinions on creative CVs, you know, when they're like super designed or extravagant. I think don't worry about that. At the end of the day, not everyone's got great design skills and you don't need them for some roles. So I think that it can come across as quite intimidating probably to others as well. And I think having the information there, although it needs to be nicely presented, showing what you can do is more important than, you know, making it look super impressive.
Yeah.
Because you just need to know what they've done really in the information. A lot of people do reach out to me on LinkedIn, and I think, wow, that's a lot. I think at least then you're front of mind. And although, like, for example, my junior roles, I don't hire for them. Like, that sits with the kind of managers in that team or whoever they're reporting into. But if someone messages me and I look at their profile and see what they've done and like have a conversation, then I'd just maybe say to the person who is hiring, oh, by the way, this person's messaged me, look for their name, etc. So I think, yeah, research who it is who's going to be hiring or who it is in those departments and ask for information. I do think a lot of people are willing to give their time to be like, okay, look, listen, I'm not hiring that role, but I know who is, like, get in contact with them, ask them a question. Yeah, don't be afraid to send someone a DM. Because they can either reply or not reply. Do you know what I mean? Like,
that was such a social thing. Drop a DM.
Yeah,
Look, I've absolutely loved this. It's been so insightful. Your career's been incredible. One last question, which is the whole purpose of this, is we want to inspire the future generation of this amazing industry. If you could go back to Vicky leaving university, what advice would you give her?
I was thinking about this because obviously it's been on your other podcast. I think one thing I've learned and definitely improved now, and I also saw someone share it on social the other day, is remember to have a life outside of work. And it can be difficult, and I think when you're passionate, and I think definitely when you're in, I suppose, the creative side, like, you're constantly in work mind. Just even when you're like on Instagram, it's like, oh, that person would be good to work with. Oh, I like that piece of content. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're constantly consumed by work and you never really switch off. And I think, take a break, take your annual leave. I never did. And you don't get it back. Like, it rolls over, but then it rolls over every year. So yeah, okay, sometimes you might get paid it, but really, it's kind of lost. And there's a lot of holidays I could have gone on that I didn't. Have a balance, because I mean, it's those quotes go around, don't they? Like, if you were to die, your employer would replace you in a month, but like your family and friends would think about it forever or something, which sounds great. Yeah. I think
it's true though, isn't it? Yeah. It is true. Yeah. It is true. But you spend so much time at work, don't you? I actually like that. Remember to have a life. So I think that's what we will go with the quote on this one. I really like that. Vicky, it's been amazing. Absolutely incredible speaking with you. Thank you so much. It has been an amazing career. And yeah, it's been insightful. I'm sure my marketing manager is going to go absolutely nuts with all of this. So thank you so much for your time, Vicky. I really, really appreciate it. So everyone, that's the end of this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned, subscribe, like, share. Please follow us on all of the channels that are going to be in the links below. I'll be announcing the next guest in the next couple of days. So Vicky, again, thanks for your time.
Thank you.